Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. That's 855-915-WMFO. Write it down, plug it into your phone, call into the show. Be a part of the fun. We love to hear from our listeners. Don't forget, you can also find us online, facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. Coming up later tonight, they spent $5 million for 30 seconds of airtime to get you excited about their products. But do you even remember what they were selling? It is our annual Super Bowl recall quiz.
You still have a very large smile on your
face. Lisa Nichols will be put
to
the test.
Could it be because our own New England Patriots won the Super Bowl. Champions once again.
We gotta talk about this. We gotta talk about this because...
I still can't believe that it happened.
You know, at the end of the third quarter, I'm sitting there. I was at a party at my friend Brian's house. And not that Brian. Not the one that's on in Atlanta now, who never calls us or comes in or does any of that. Shay comes in. Does Brian come in? No. But I was at my other friend Brian's house. And somebody pointed out at the start of the fourth quarter that we were now 1 point further behind than we had been at the start of the third quarter, which was a good point. Yes. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, you know, Atlanta's a nice town. I like Matt Ryan. He used to play for BC. He's a good quarterback. Wouldn't mind seeing him win a Super Bowl. Had Julio Jones on my fantasy team. Wouldn't mind seeing
it. And then you snapped back into reality what am I even saying?
I'm looking at it and I'm like, would this be the end of the world if we lost? No, it wouldn't. Would a team that I actually respect and admire win? Yes. You know, it's not like you're losing to the Giants or you're getting beaten by, you know, the Dallas Cowboys with their rookies. As much as I like those rookies.
I think there's so many thoughts that went into my head were the redemption that this game, winning the Super Bowl after what had just prevailed over the past, you know, 2 years with Deflategate and everything going on. Then you hear the stories about how, you know, this is the first game of the season that Tom Brady's mother actually got to go to because she is sick. And there was just so much with that. And I'm like, we have to win this. But for the majority of the game, I don't know if it was food coma and I kept drinking. And the problem was I kept drinking vodka because I was getting so angry at the situation.
Yeah.
What is funny is, I know you're going to make fun of me, but my boyfriend and I both have Patriots pajama pants that we've been wearing for all the games. And lucky enough, they've won while wearing all those. So, you know, we're getting ready for the game and he says, you got to wear the pants. Like, I'm not wearing pajama pants to a party, regardless that it was at my friend's house, who I'm sure wouldn't care. So we brought them in the car just in case. And once they started doing really bad, he ran to the car and we had to put them on.
So you're out in public wearing pajama pants.
Yep.
Not just any pajama pants.
Then we're not clean enough. I mean, they probably had makeup all over. Yeah.
Quote unquote lucky pajama pants.
Lucky pajama pants.
Is where we're at with this. Okay. Yeah. You can't co-host the show anymore. I'm sorry. Co-host auditions will be next week. 855-915-9636.
Hey, you know what? They won, though.
They did win. Well, this is as the fourth quarter. Yeah, maybe 5 minutes to go. We should have lost that game. And then things started breaking our way. As soon as Edelman made the catch,
which is funny because so many times we've been on the other side of those catches
yeah.
that have hurt us so much, whether it's the Hail Mary pass that reached up that we were when we were playing the Giants, or the ball in the helmet situation. So many times we were on the losing side of that. Now finally it helped us. And yeah,
if you get a chance, if you got Showtime, if you got NFL Network, watch Inside the NFL. They had LeGarrette Blount mic'd up for the game. They had a microphone on Edelman for a lot of the game. They had Brady mic'd up. And at one point, after Julio Jones made that ridiculous sideline catch,
mm-hmm.
which he just does, he does that once a game. That's how good that kid is. He does that once a game. Mad respect for Julio Jones. I love the kid. One of them on my fantasy team every year. After he made that catch, they got a shot of LeGarrette Blount sitting there looking at it with like his eyes like popping out of his head. And he says, every single one of these games, there is that one catch. And if you're a Patriots fan, you're like, there it is.
Well, I remember there's the catch that seeing kills that us. And just looking with the Edelman catch, I'm like, there's no way he caught that.
Yeah.
Then they showed a couple of the angles. Like, that didn't touch the ground. How did that not touch the ground?
That is one of the most ridiculous catches you will ever see.
There's a
in
lot
the
of
NFL.
Stuff that's floating around on, you know, social media and Facebook. It's like 120 seconds wrapped up of all the, from the turning point of when the Patriots came back. And it is just like sports porn.
Yeah.
It is so yeah. amazing to yeah. watch.
It makes it a little easier to stare down the barrels at the end of the NFL season when your team wins the championship.
Mm-hmm.
When the team wins the fifth championship, when they set all kinds of records. But once they won the coin toss in overtime,
you knew it was over.
You knew it was over
mm-hmm.
because Atlanta's defense was gassed.
Oh, of course. So many times you were, and this is what the Patriots were so good at. This is what Tom Brady is so good at. And you could see that hurry up offense, especially in the end of the fourth quarter, where, you know, Atlanta's defense wasn't even setting up.
No.
They were just so confused of what was going on. And that is what Brady does so well. It's just shotgun, shotgun, shotgun.
But there's another aspect to this, because if you watch the game, in the first half, Atlanta comes out and they're playing a lot of man defense. That's not something that Atlanta's really known for. Atlanta typically plays zone, and Brady's really good against zone. So they're playing man defense. They're rushing four, they're rushing five, something else they don't usually do. They're getting a lot of pressure on Brady. So not only are they in Brady's face every single play, he's got no one to throw to because everybody's covered. And they're flying all over the field. I have never seen a team close on the man with the ball the way that the Falcons did through the first three quarters of that game. Because as soon as a Patriot got his hands on the football, even if he shook off the first defender,
mm-hmm.
suddenly there's three or four more guys in the picture closing in. And it was an outstanding defensive display by that team.
And watching that, you just became, you know, kind of sunk down in your chair saying, there's no way that we can get
but
out of
see,
this.
See, there's just one thing with that. And it goes back to the way that Atlanta made it to the playoffs and made it to the Super Bowl. Atlanta's game is, we're going to score a buttload of points in the first half, and then we're going to hold it in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, that works. And there was a point in the third quarter, right after Gostkowski had the doink, to miss the extra point. When you're sitting there and you're like, this team is going to fold it in right now. And a lot of teams would. If that had been the regular season, I think even the Patriots would have folded in at mm-hmm. that point. Because the win seems so far away. It's the Super Bowl, so you can't fold. You've got to keep playing. And this is what the Patriots do better than anybody. Because as it got deeper and deeper into the fourth quarter, you could see the exhaustion on the part of that defense. And the Patriots were running long drives, and they were keeping the defense on the field. And the defense was losing their ability to keep up with everything.
It becomes impossible.
So the New England Patriots, who are capable of playing 60 minutes plus in any game at any point during the season, ran up against an Atlanta defense that tired itself out with 15 minutes to go in the game. That's a big part of the reason why we won this thing. It's a big part of the reason why we won this thing.
Watching the focus and the aggression on the Patriots side going into especially the end of that fourth quarter
yeah.
was amazing.
Yeah.
And you knew it was turned on. And of course, when you have the momentum of scoring so many touchdowns, you might prevail. And they did.
I felt a little bad for Matt Ryan out in that coin toss. Because you get to the coin toss at the end of the game, and here comes Matt Ryan, and there's like three Patriot defenders running out on the field, and it's like, Matt Ryan looks a little lonely out there. Mm-hmm. You know, can we have a co-captain on that team? Like, get Julio out there.
Now, do you think it was bad when the Atlanta Falcons owner came down from his box after dancing the whole time, which was hilarious? I find a very strong resemblance to Jafar from Aladdin. There's some great memes out there. But, I mean, come on. You cursed your own team by bringing your trophy wife down there.
It's Arthur Blank, founder of the Home Despot. So Arthur Blank is the home despot. Somebody at Brian's party said he looks like a Dick Tracy villain. Mm-hmm. And every time they went back to him, he'd start screaming, "Get off the screen, Dick Tracy." And we were all laughing about that for the rest of the night. Because he does. He looks like a cartoon bad guy. And what every single shot of him suffering on the sidelines is priceless.
Now, I know you never missed work. You didn't go to the parade yesterday. Of course not.
Been there, done that.
I know.
You know,
it's crazy to think that even, you know, I'm not too much younger than you, but just in my lifetime, I've been able to see so many parades and these rolling rallies where, you know, our grandparents and parents really didn't get to see those.
Yeah.
So I think if the weather was a little bit better, I know many people that did go and they said it was off. I mean, it was great for the, you know, 2 minutes.
Sure.
My smart friends hung out at the bars near Boylston Street and just ran out onto the street when the rally did go through. But, yeah. I don't know.
The Boston police said 1 million people showed up for that thing mm-hmm. yesterday. That, by the way, is still smaller than the crowd for Donald Trump's inauguration. The White House wanted me to let you know that.
It's just so
Kellyanne
ironic.
Kellyanne Conway called and said, I have to make that.
You know, Belichick screaming, no day off.
Gronk's got his shirt off. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, look, it's great. I'm amazed that 1 million people showed up. I mean, this is a historic win. And the Pats fans are like super jacked after that win. People were out like.
I'm surprised they didn't hold it off till today.
People went, well, Mayor Marty, I think, or somebody. But I think it was Mayor Marty said that they had to do it on Tuesday because everybody leaves otherwise. If you want the Patriots to show up, it's like they're coming back on Monday, so
but
they're going to be there.
That's not true. I mean, I think that's completely, you know, bull because no player, regardless if we're talking about the Bruins, Red Sox, they always say we need to do it so quick. Whereas, what was it, 2 years ago when they waited 4 days and everybody was scared that some of the Patriots players were going to go to their homes? No, of course, this is their time to shine. Regardless if they're going to go home, they're going to fly back for this parade.
Listen, Tom Brady has got to go reload his avocado water, all right, so he can keep defying time.
Is he buying that asparagus water from
Whole Foods? I don't know what he's doing, but sign me up. I want some of that, you know?
No nightshades.
No nightshades. But just, it's stunning to me that you can still get 1 million people to show up for one of these things, even though everybody was hopped up for this win. Because when I was at the divisional championship game a couple of weeks ago against Houston, the stadium was really kind of like a tomb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's sitting there and it's like, yeah, we're going to win this. And we know we're going to win this. And we know we're going to the AFC championship game. And there is a certain level of jadedness that is set in, particularly with the fans at the stadium. Now, Pittsburgh was another story entirely because Pittsburgh, my section was rocking and you can feel it sway. And I've never felt that before. You know, the sections are built to move around when everybody starts jumping up and down. Pittsburgh people were losing their minds, at least for the first half of the game. Once we had it put away, everybody was like, yeah, we'll stick around and see the trophy. Yeah. But we're spoiled. We're beyond spoiled.
One more win.
At the same time, you know, it's great to ride this thing out as long as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. I wish I posted a picture on Facebook on Monday, but I wish people could see from the picture. I work right across from the airport. So knowing that they were going to fly in around 3:30, 4 o'clock, all of a sudden you see there had to have been at least 200 emergency personnel, whether it be a ambulance, fire truck, or police car. The light that completely took up the whole landscape of East Boston.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch. And you see the plane come in. And simultaneously, I'm watching it from the bar where I work on the television. It was just fantastic.
One of my clients was going the opposite way on the highway when the buses went by, and they actually shut down the highway for the buses.
It's crazy.
And I'm like, I don't think the New England Patriots need like the VIP terrorism proof highway shutdown. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know why we're doing that. But I was like, how many buses went by? And she was like, a lot. So it was a lot of buses. But yeah, they shut down on ramps. They wouldn't let anybody get anywhere near the buses. See, really?
Really? They're all partying on my roof deck or, you know, across the street.
It's a football team. It's not Putin, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, were they all in there last night?
No.
No?
No.
They coming in tonight?
It's actually closed for a private party.
Not for the Patriots?
I heard some of them were across the street at LTK on, I think it was Monday night.
Yeah. Them Patriots. They like to party, those guys. Yeah. All right. Enough fun. We'll talk about the Super Bowl more later in the program. But for now, let's find out what's going on that's important and not football related.
Well, in local news, we learned Chelsea and Lawrence don't agree with the president. Two Massachusetts cities with large Latino populations have sued President Donald Trump over his threat to cut federal funding to so-called sanctuary cities. The lawsuit filed by Chelsea and Lawrence in federal court in Boston on Wednesday says Trump's executive order to withdraw funding from communities that decline to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, quote, constitutes unconstitutional coercion, end quote, and quote, a major affront of basic principles of federalism and separation of powers, end quote. San Francisco filed a similar lawsuit last week. The Massachusetts suit says the president's orders were made without congressional approval and is overly broad. The suit says losing federal funding could cause significant hardship. About 62% of Chelsea's nearly 40,000 residents identify as Hispanic or Latino, and nearly 74% of Lawrence's 80,000 residents identify as Hispanic or Latino. We knew this was coming. I mean, we've been talking on the show with what is going on in one of our neighbors here at the station in Medford, Somerville, being another sanctuary city.
Did I miss something in civics class or in my study of U.S. history when I came to the realization that all powers that are not specifically reserved for the federal government revert to the states? Mm-hmm. And that the power to determine who can come and go into the United States is reserved for the federal government?
That is true.
So why are the states suing when they know that this is in the United States Constitution? That the president, in fact, has this authority? Can someone explain that to me?
Apparently we know it. But you know, everybody from Chelsea, Lawrence, Somerville, any of these cities that are pushing forward this, I mean, when we have Mayor Marty Walsh going inside City Hall and talking about, we're going to use City Hall as a refuge for all these people that are supposedly getting kicked out. Don't worry. Mayor Marty Walsh has your back.
Yeah. Well, Mayor.
And we said it over and over again, though, on this show, that it doesn't matter. Please go. Go and try to defy the president.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't do it. You can't do it because the Constitution grants the president, and precedent grants the president some pretty broad powers. Mm-hmm. And we only need to look as far back as World War II and what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did to every Japanese citizen that was in the United States of America. All right? They were all thrown in internment camps. That was not an act of Congress that did that. That was a presidential executive order that did that. So the precedent is there. Okay. Donald Trump would actually, or President the Donald, I should say, would actually be following precedent if he ordered all of the Muslims in the United States to be rounded up and put in internment camps. Not that anyone would do that. Not that he's even thinking about that. So what we have is an endless series of lawsuits, which, by the way, are funded with your tax dollars.
Yes.
That have no merit and are going to fail. Maybe you can convince some circuit court judge, maybe even an appellate court judge who is kind-hearted to overlook the law and say, yes, this executive order goes too far. All that's going to do is get it kicked up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, which tends to be a little bit stricter on interpreting the Constitution and precedent than the local courts, is going to say the executive order is legal.
But again, I...
At which point, by the way, millions more of your money will be wasted. These are your taxpayer dollars mm-hmm. that are being wasted by these cities and towns. Money that could be going to schools, money could be going to the poor, money could be going to fighting drug abuse.
And how many millions of dollars is Massachusetts in a deficit right now?
Please.
Should we add that up?
No. That's the deficit is just a thing that's always there. We don't pay that down.
Of course.
We don't balance the budget in this state. Please stop.
But I hate this narrative that is continually being had in saying, in trying to convince people and shove it down their throats that this is illegal to do this. Why? And you talk about how simple it is to understand something that you learned in civics class and that it essentially falls in the hands of the federal government. How do I know that these people that are here illegally, they're breaking the law? So you can't tell me, and whether we're talking about the mayor of Somerville or Chelsea or any of these are Lawrence, any of these other cities, that these are not illegal criminals creating.
Well, this is.
It's mind-boggling.
The root of this whole thing is that these cities and towns have been disobeying federal law. Okay? They have been disobeying federal law.
Yeah, we're not talking about just here in the Bay State. This is happening across.
It's not happening all over the country, but it's happening in certain parts of the country. This is by no means a universal situation, mm-hmm. okay? And these cities and towns have been empowered by politicians who know better, who would rather curry favor with an immigrant voter base, even though the illegals can't vote.
Quote unquote, can't okay? vote.
Mm-hmm. The illegals can't vote. Yep. So why are our politicians currying favor with people who can't vote?
I mean, again, 62% of Chelsea's 40,000 residents Hispanic or Latino, 74% in Lawrence.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe that's what you're appealing to maintain an office? Is this done by just personal interest and saying, no, I got your back? Really, these politicians, can you tell me that they have hearts of gold and they really care about their constituents and the people of the community and making the community better? No, they don't.
No, they don't even know what American values means. And they certainly don't embody American values. They just stand around and scream
about it. So if you went up to them and said, why are you disobeying federal law? Why are you using my hard-earned tax dollars to go to these lawsuits that are complete crap? But no.
The rhetoric involved in all of this is appalling as well, because I was reading some of what was said in the filing in San Francisco yesterday against this. And this is dealing with the immigration ban, because we had the hearing in federal court about that. And they're filing these briefs that say the states are losing millions of dollars. University students can't get into the country. Families are being torn apart. Communities are being torn apart. There are 60,000 people who are affected by this travel ban, which, by the way, is temporary.
Mm-hmm.
By the time this makes its way through the courts, the executive order will be over. It's 90 days, folks. 90 days. We're going to inconvenience 60,000 people for 90 days until we can figure out whether or not...
Oh, no, I've heard opponents of this give me every excuse, from a mother was separated from her breastfeeding child for 5 hours to people trying to get surgery here in the United States.
Yeah, you don't have a right to get surgery in the United States. I'm sorry, that unless you're an American citizen. In that case, yes, you have a right.
And yes, I mean, luckily here in the United States, we do have amazing healthcare. But I also know many doctors here in the United States that have traveled to other countries.
We have a lot of
to
doctors.
Perform those. So if I'm going to inconvenience a few people from getting surgery, and we're not talking about life-threatening surgeries, and please call up the show and give me an example of this, 855-915-9636, to possibly prevent another massive attack. And I said it before and I said it last week on the show. What is it going to take? Is it going to take you or you or you to get affected by a tragedy like this for you to wake up and say, you know what, maybe that 90 days of inconvenience isn't so bad. Maybe you can realize that there are real passport making machines that are creating passports for hundreds of thousands of jihads to now have the possibility of flying anywhere in the country.
I understand that the losers are children and they want to stamp their feet and scream and yell like children because that's all they know how to do. Okay? They've been told no. They've never been told no in their entire lives. And their world is ending because somebody said, no, you can't do whatever the heck you want. Somebody who is an actual leader and not George W. Bush or Barack Obama or any of the other, I'll stick my finger in the wind and see which way it blows and try and make everybody happy, quote unquote, leaders that we've had. Okay. Donald Trump is actually going to do stuff and he doesn't give a damn whether you agree with him or not. That's leadership, folks. That's what leadership looks like. You may not like it. I don't like everything the guy does, but that's leadership. That's political will. We're not used to that in this country because we haven't seen it in this country since 1992.
And look where that's gotten us.
But the real problem with this is the taxpayer money that is being wasted on this. So when they start cutting programs at your kid's school, when they start telling you got to pay more for your recycling pickup, when they tell you we can't fix the hole in the road down the street, ask your local leaders how much money they've been wasting
because
fighting legal executive orders.
And if you'd like to prove me wrong, I would say, especially in cities like Chelsea and Lawrence, I'm sure, especially in the schools, they could use the money.
At Chelsea and Lawrence, they don't care. Have you been over those towns lately?
The cities don't. Mm-hmm.
Have you been over those towns lately?
Derek, Chelsea's the new up-and-coming, like, South Boston.
No, there's, like, a strip of Chelsea where you want to be, and the rest of it is still full of stabbings. I've been over there. I spent a lot of time over there this summer. Look, it's all well and good to fight the president. It's all well and good to disagree, okay? But before we start filing suit against these things, I think it ought to be put in front of the voters. And the voters should be told ahead of time, this is how much it's going to cost us to fight this executive order.
No, that would
mean
transparency. We don't do that in here.
This is how many millions of dollars of your tax money that is meant to support this community we are going to waste on a chaotic battle against the United States Constitution. And I guarantee you, if they did that, a lot of these lawsuits would never happen. Some of them still would. I can still see Lawrence or Chelsea, maybe even Somerville, getting on board and saying, we spend all the tax money, destroy Trump, that's all we care about. Meanwhile, the kids are sitting in their own drool, you know, because they haven't learned anything in school because they had to fire all the teachers because they are spending money fighting executive orders. Folks, you have to follow federal law. That's the way the United States works, okay? Congress set up the Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The president is the final word on all of those things. The president is using legal means to enforce the law. Cities and towns can't turn around and say, oh, we're not going to enforce those federal laws. By the way, this is a big double-edged sword. And I'll be the first to admit it's a big double-edged sword because the whole reason we have legal marijuana in some parts of this country is because states have chosen to ignore federal law. And what we do here may come to blow back over there, which nobody wants to see. And as I've said before, you got to be consistent. You can't pick and choose which laws you want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with sanctuary cities. Okay. You want to have a sanctuary city? Fine. Go ahead. I don't care. But when somebody walks in and says, we're going to enforce this, don't turn around and waste taxpayer dollars trying to fight it. Especially all these cities and towns are walking around crying poor mouth all the time. If you don't have the money to pay for your own services for your residents, where are you getting the money to take this to a federal court?
I'd love to know.
Where is that money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
That's
shameful.
That's the question you should be asking Mayor Mahdi. I think Chelsea.
He has your back.
Chelsea's still in receivership with the city of Boston, isn't it?
It is.
Isn't Mayor Mahdi making that call? Mm-hmm. Is this a little proxy battle by Mayamati to challenge Donald Trump?
No, it's complete task force, as they're saying.
Go ask the mayor of Lawrence where the money's coming from. Go ask Joe Curtatone where the money's coming from. I'll tell you the answer they're going to give you. That's their answer.
It's true.
It's coming out of your taxes, folks. And as a voter, as a taxpayer, you have a right to decide how your tax dollars will be used. And voters need to stand up when cities and towns are doing things like this with their tax dollars. And when these politicians come back around later this year and they say, we need more money for the schools, that's when you throw them out. That's when you say,
and you're wondering why every year your taxes are going up.
That's when you say, well, you shouldn't have wasted all the money fighting President the Donald on a battle that anybody with a basic understanding of civics could have told you were going to lose.
Nonsense.
Absolute nonsense. In national news, U.S. military and civilian officials told the New York Times that Yemen has refused to allow any further commando raids following public outrage over the deaths of children. Chief Petty Officer William Owens was killed in the raid, as was the 8-year-old daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki, an American who became an al-Qaeda leader and was killed in a 2011 drone strike. The mission to capture laptops and intelligence in Yemen had been developed during the Obama administration, but put on hold until it could take place on a moonless night, which fell shortly after President Donald's inauguration. Members of SEAL Team 6 who took part in the raid said that their targets had been tipped off, and they found themselves in a firefight as soon as they landed, leading to casualties on both sides. Yemen's operational ban does not extend to drones or to U.S. personnel who are stationed in the country.
I mean, keeping with Washington's completely toxic political environment that's happening right now, Trump's opponents quickly seized on this opportunity as evidence of president's carelessness, you know, to put, as it's being portrayed, American troops' lives in danger.
What they should be talking about, and
which is absolute crap and nonsense.
What they should be talking about and what they should be investigating is who tipped off al-Qaeda to the fact that the U.S. was coming.
Mm-hmm.
There was a suggestion made by somebody in a position of authority that low hovering drones may have tipped off al-Qaeda that something was happening.
No, and this is the intel that we were supposed to know. I mean, all these special operation plans, they're reviewed by so many cornerstones of the government. And I mean, they're reviewed by the Pentagon, and then it goes through recommended for Trump's approval. If the commander on the ground during this mission believes that there is any intel that was leaked to al-Qaeda or the support was insufficient, they could have called it off. They have that okay to do that.
Yeah. They chose not to, by the way. SEAL Team 6 chose not to.
Of course, just like anything, it is going to be, you know, finger pointing to Trump and saying he doesn't know. In my opinion, I think he should be going to them and saying, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I mean, Trump should demand, first of all, what are the goals of the United States and what do they plan on doing there? I mean, you can't just go in and start raiding a country if you don't have a clear set plan.
Well, this plan was developed while Obama was in office by the Pentagon. Okay, so this is not a plan that Donald Trump came up with.
Yeah, but the big question is, what is the main strategy in Yemen?
The strategy in this particular raid.
Because to me, it seems like we've basically just been playing, hope we get lucky with these drone strikes.
Yemen does not have a functional central government, first of all. That's a problem by itself. The strategy here was to get their hands. This was the building they attacked was al-Qaeda in Yemen's headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some stories floating back and forth that they may have been trying to take out the leader of al-Qaeda in Yemen. They didn't get him. They deny they were looking for him. Might have been a bonus. The reason they were going in was to get laptops. They were going in to get laptops and flash drives and everything else and figure out what al-Qaeda in Yemen's next move was going to be. They haven't heard from him for a while. Vulnerable time in the United States, so they think. So we're going in and we're getting some intelligence. It didn't work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because somehow they were tipped off. Now, SEAL Team 6 knew that al-Qaeda had been tipped off. Because when they run an operation like this, there is at least one advanced spotter on the ground. And the advanced spotter on the ground is radioing back to the helicopters. And he's saying, we got guys on rooftops. Stuff. We got guys in buildings. We got guys everywhere. So think about what you're doing. And they were like, We're still Team Six. We got this.
Because essentially, though, in this landscape, we've been, you know, conducting all of these drone strikes that may or may not work sometimes, where we've been only watching Al-Qaeda grow larger in this peninsula. And we have connections with Saudi Arabia, who's also in there.
What happened in Yemen is a risk with any one of these operations that we run. Could it happen when we took out bin Laden? Could it? I mean, we've had hostages that we've tried to free executed by ISIS during operations like this. This is a hugely risky operation because you're taking a small team of people and dropping them into the middle of a hostile environment. We got to figure out what went wrong here. That's the real issue. Whether or not Donald Trump bungled his first operation, or forget all of that. It's noise.
No, because that's a narrative that your mainstream media is trying to push.
Operations like this are necessary. Operations like this happen all the time. They will continue to happen all the time. We got to figure out what we did wrong. We got to figure out how Al-Qaeda...
But you agree that there is going to be more scrutiny on this administration than any of the past administrations.
Oh, of course, because that's the whole thing. You know, the media is making nonstop noise. Everything Donald Trump does, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. All you got to do is pick up any newspaper. This is bad, this is bad. You turn on the internet. This is bad, this is bad. All your friends on Facebook. This is bad, this is bad, this is bad. I say let them keep doing it. Let them keep doing it. Because we all know what happened to the boy who cried wolf. We all know what happened to Chicken Little. It is a matter of time before everybody just tunes out the hysteria and says, I had enough. I'm not listening. It's like that one friend that you've got that is a continual downer. Every time you talk to that friend is like, my life is terrible. I hate my life and I hate my job and I hate everything. And you're friends with them because they're nice people. But when you're having a party, you don't invite them over. You know, if it's a small, intimate dinner gathering, you're not inviting that friend. If it's a big party, you'll invite them over because you can go stick them in the corner and let them mope over there and make someone else will get sucked in. But they're not going to bring the whole room down. Dinner party, they're bringing the whole room down. That's what's going on right now.
Now,
the left-wing media... In particular, and I'll single out the Huffington Post, and I will single out what's left of Gawker Media, is this constant drumbeat of fear, fear, fear. Be afraid, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. Every single day. Enough.
Because, I don't think you're only seeing it.
Because every day that goes by that the world doesn't end is another day that they're wrong. It's like the guy standing on the street corner with the sandwich board.
You're seeing this across the board for the majority.
The end of the world is nigh. Sooner or later, you're going to be right.
75% of media that's trying to push this narrative.
Yeah.
Now, we're in a situation where understanding that with terrorist groups, not that Al-Qaeda has been quiet, but they've been kind of overshadowed somewhat from ISIS, and so many people were going from that group into ISIS. They still remain.
But here's a reason why. The internet is young. The young are left-leaning, okay? All of these news sites are driven by clicks and traffic. They're not driven by any desire to tell you the truth. They're not driven by any desire to be journalists. They are driven by money and only money. And in order to make money, they're constantly promoting the stories that get the most clicks. The internet is young and left-leaning. So what gets the most clicks? Doom. Doom. Non-stop doom. It's the end of the world.
It's true. It's so difficult every day to tune that out and try to do what you and I do and figure out what the actual story is and even put some sort of sense.
Even Reuters is going down the tubes. Yeah. They got a flashing GIF on their homepage today, on their mobile site. I'm like, you're Reuters for crying out loud. You're one of the oldest and most respected news organizations on the planet.
It's the same thing with the BBC and seeing how much they've gone down.
Well, the BBC is way, way deep down the rabbit hole. Way, way deep down. I mean, they are treading into Huffington Post territory where you almost can't call them a news organization anymore. I don't know who's paying for that, but that is being done for the benefit of American audiences. That is not what the BBC used to be.
Mm-hmm.
They're gone. CNN, gone. USA Today, gone. New York Times, losing it. still okay for the most part.
But also maintain a very left stance.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who actually is emerging in all of this as a reasonable place to go and get news is Bloomberg. Because Bloomberg, at the end of the day, looks at the news through the eyes of business. Bloomberg is reporting on something, it's because it moves markets or it affects companies. Not because they have a political axe to grind. So,
which we have currently a political landscape that does depend a lot on that.
So they're actually coming off pretty well in all of this. The Los Angeles Times has actually been pretty good for the last month or so. So I'd recommend going over there, getting some of your news, because what you're getting out of the majors right now, it's just noise and garbage. I don't think I had a single story this week that I pulled off of CNN. Not one, because every time I go there, I'm like, this is the same garbage that's on USA Today. And USA Today, this is the same garbage that's on the Huffington Post. And this is the same garbage that's on Gawker. Is there any news out here?
And I just want to say, breaking news, Jeff Sessions was sworn in as Attorney General.
Of course he was.
Narrowly.
Well, it didn't need Mike Pence, so right. That's a step in the right direction. This is WMFO Medford. In world news, there have been 5 nights of rioting in poor suburbs north of Paris. Did you hear about this, by the way?
Yes.
I know you did. I know you did. And I mean, I got to give the local audience the benefit of the doubt, because it's been Saturation Patriots coverage for the last 72 hours.
It's hard to dive into news and find anything other than Patriots.
You're out of touch, and you know you're out of touch, because it's like everybody's like, hey, we won, and it's like, let's celebrate the win, and everything on the news is about the Patriots. So there have been 5 nights of rioting in Paris. In poor suburbs north of Paris.
Oh, it gets better.
The unrest began after stories circulated that a 22-year-old had been beaten and sodomized with a baton by 4 police officers. One of the officers has been charged with rape, while 3 others have been charged with aggravated assault. The victim, who was visited in his hospital room by French President François Hollande, appealed for calm, but that did not deter demonstrators from setting fire to dozens of cars in a nursery school last night. Police made 17 arrests amid concerns that the demonstrators could grow to match the 2005 riots that spread across France. Same place where the 2005 riots began.
I don't think you mentioned this is a black man.
Same place. Well, the neighborhood where this happened is a neighborhood that is populated almost entirely by African migrants. Mm-hmm. All of these neighborhoods.
Which is interesting, because Paris is pretty much set up like that. It's a melting pot of people, but everybody has their separate areas that in the neighborhoods.
Think of Paris as being somewhat like a Trivial Pursuit game token, where the very center is the Eiffel Tower, and then everything runs out in a wheel.
Off of it. That's a perfect example.
And all those little wedges are different bits
minority
of society.
Groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the rich people who are over in the south and the east do not deal with the poor people who are largely in the north and over to the west. So there are some very, very... Unemployment is twice the national average in these neighborhoods. Education is poor. Opportunities are poor. So this is the same place that gave birth to the 2005 riots. The same place that gave birth to the 2012 riots. Nothing has changed. Paris learns nothing in between these episodes. And so bad conditions continue to fester and riots continue to occur. I don't know what these cops are thinking. I have no idea what these cops are thinking.
That's the biggest question I'm trying to comprehend, because we look here in the United States where we have clearly a problem with white officers and in black men. Trying to understand a attack with a baton and then sodomy?
Yeah.
It's kind of a head-scratcher, no? In trying to figure out what's going on. At least we don't have, you know, a long history of this. I hope this isn't a new trend that's going to be happening in these Paris neighborhoods.
Yeah.
But there are questions. Communities have the right to have answers to these questions. How did this happen? Why did this happen?
This is Shades of Abner Louima, for those who remember that, where he was sodomized with a broom handle while in custody of the New York City police. and there were criminal trials, and I forget what the verdicts were. But he did get several million dollars out of a civil suit against the police. So I don't know how this happens. I don't know what these cops are thinking. Rioting, obviously, not the solution. But, you know, if you're going to have a district of poor people and just constantly oppress them, you can't be surprised when they rise up after a while.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do we have a long history of, obviously not to the extreme of this, but as you just said, oppression? And trying to understand all these attacks that happened here in, you know, not attacks, but deaths that happened from these young black men here in the United States, and saying when you have these poor neighborhoods and you have a predominantly white police force continually going into these neighborhoods and trying to shake down these, you know, people for, what, a $25 ticket for doing whatever. You have people that become angry. Now, is this happening in Paris, where you have these police that are continually going into these very, very poor neighborhoods and trying to shake down the people?
It's not... Oh, man. Oh, let me be kind and say that the French are provincial. And that their attitudes of provinciality and the superiority of French culture are reflected in the way that they treat immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And let me leave it at that and say that there is a cultural and institutional situation over there that allows this situation to persist. So the police aren't... you can't sum it up by saying the police are just over there harassing people. There are crimes taking place in these communities. And these communities need...
No, of course, no neighborhood is perfect.
These communities need extra policing. However, part of the reason that there are crimes taking place in these communities is that there is rampant poverty. There is no education. There are no jobs. And when you take jobs and education away from people and give them no means to improve themselves...
They turn to committing criminal...
Yes.
Yeah.
They start selling drugs. Mm-hmm. They start engaging in prostitution. They do what they have to do to survive. People don't want to do that. Some people do. Some people are just like, I'm going to be a drug dealer because that's cool. Those people are idiots, okay?
No, it's the same situation that's happening in Baltimore. When you are growing up with this constantly around you, and especially kids that are growing up in these neighborhoods in Paris, there is no way out.
So correct.
You wake up and say, this is the only means to get what I need to get by. Whether it be prostitution, whether it be selling drugs.
And these riots...
It is. Prostitution is very high.
These riots, like other riots before them, like Baltimore gets tricky, but like Baltimore, we'll throw Baltimore in there, like Ferguson, like Watts, are built out of years of frustration and ignorance. These people have been ignored. These people have been forgotten. Everybody's hoping they'll just go away, or at least stay over in their little corner, stay over in their little cheese-shaped slice of the Trivial Pursuit piece, and not bother anybody. That's not going to happen forever. History tells us that's not going to happen forever. And the difference between the United States and France is that after Watts, changes were made. After Ferguson, changes were made. After Baltimore, changes were made. After every French riot, things stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't expect results overnight.
You can only for so long have communities continually being
brought down. Right. You cannot easily overcome a complete lack of education, but you got to do something.
I mean, you also can't be surprised when you do have these uprisings.
Correct. But by the way, no word of this in the U.S. media. Hasn't hit the mainstream media yet. I don't know why.
Well, today in sports, we learned if you want to hide a sports news announcement, release it on the day of a Super Bowl parade. The Boston Bruins fired Stanley Cup winning coach Claude Julien on Tuesday when the team was in danger of missing the playoffs for the third straight season. He was the longest running tenured coach in the NHL. General manager Don Sweeney announced the change on Tuesday, naming assistant coach Bruce Cassidy as interim coach. Julien was 419, 226, 94 in 10 seasons that included two trips to the NHL Finals and a Stanley Cup title in 2001. The Bruins lost in the finals 2 years ago, 2 years later, and a year that earned 117 point and the President's Trophy before losing in the conference semifinals to arch rival Montreal. Sweeney explained at the press conference that it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction to fire Claude Julien. Quote, it would never rest with a win or a loss. I wasn't making a decision on, well, we lost tonight or can win tomorrow. It was really a communication level that I could not get past the fact that I wasn't committed to my own mind to sort going beyond where we are right now with Claude, Sweeney said, end quote.
Goodbye. Yes. Goodbye, Claude. Thank you. Thank you for the... For the Stanley Cup, which seems like forever ago.
There's the thing. For years, there's been all these talks. There's been all this rumors.
What do we say at the end of 2015? Fire Julien.
How many times have you and I had a conversation?
Fire Julien.
Especially in this season. In the beginning, I said, Saturday after that game, he's going to be gone. He shows back up on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday, we lose again. Get outshot 16-6. Play Long Islanders, who's the worst team in our conference. We lose. We get outshot, 26-7. How is he still coach? How is he still coach? Do I lay it solely on him? No. Because we're talking about years. We are talking about years of incredibly bad trades, bad pickups, bad signings.
I lay it on him completely because you have...
Absolutely not.
You have on paper...
You have a serious problem with upper management, and that's Neely, that's Sweeney, yes.
Come on. You have on paper one of the most talented teams in the NHL.
Do you, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you?
You're going to tell me there is any team in the NHL that has an answer for Zdeno Chara? The answer is no.
Have you been to any games this year? Have you watched any games?
I know.
Chara has been doing absolutely nothing. This man that is supposed to be the leader of a team. And may I remind you the conversation that we had in the beginning of the year when the season started and saying, if it was up to you or I, the only sole player that I would keep would be Marchand. That's it.
He is older. Slower, banged up. He's still a presence on the ice.
Yes, okay? And absolutely. He should have been traded last year, the year before. He has done absolutely nothing. He is a step behind. When you have a player that is a step behind, you can't use him as an example of on paper good.
Marchand is great. Okay. I don't like Bergeron. I don't think Bergeron has ever lived up to his potential. Or he did when we had Tyler Seguin.
And but please enlighten me about how great Rask is.
I like Torrey Krug is great. We got a lot of great young talent on this team. Tuukka Rask looked terrible in the All-Star game. Tuukka Rask gave up 3 goals in less than 2 minutes, which tells you that's in the All-Star game where people aren't playing that hard. That tells you how Tuukka Rask is doing these days, all right? Tuukka's struggling right now, and we got to figure out what's going on. But all of that comes back to coaching. We've seen teams with far lower talent make it deep into the Stanley Cup playoffs, if not win outright, because they have the right coach. Claude Julien is playing a finesse game that just doesn't exist in the NHL anymore.
No, absolutely. There's so many weeks that I look at the line changes and I scratch my head and say, what is he thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a very small knowledge of hockey coaching, but I can understand who I would put that works well together. He clearly doesn't understand that, but I cannot honestly solely blame just him. But
look at the differential.
It's time to go.
Look at the differential in shots on net between the Bruins and everyone they've played against this season. And in almost every single game.
Yeah, because every single line is awful.
Almost every single game, shots on net favor our opponents. Mm-hmm. Okay? You are never going to win hockey games if your guys aren't shooting. We're not shooting. And we've never shot under Claude Julien. Claude Julien's all about dink and dunk and wait for your moment. Not put relentless pressure mm-hmm. on the goalie until you get the puck in there. We struggle getting the puck.
No, that I can absolutely agree on.
We struggle getting out of the zone. And we have struggled getting out of the zone going all the way back. It was 2011 the last time we were in the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
We were struggling getting out of the zone back then. It's 6 years later.
No, absolutely.
And
I haven't gotten any better at it. And I'm just watching it and going down one after another, getting scored against. And saying, what is going on?
Yeah.
You have, but the team is, for the most part, you don't have that synergy, that makes a championship winning team.
I can't watch it because they can't get past center ice. And I'm sitting there and I'm banging my head on it, hands on the table. I'm like, will you get into the opponent's zone? And it's like, no, they get picked off in center ice constantly.
But what everybody is talking about it, and I think kind of puts it past, because everybody does agree, I think maybe it was his time to go.
Yeah.
But you are going to announce it right, 2 hours, when you know every single media outlet, especially that has a sports beat, is going to be reporting on the Patriots parade.
That's why you, what do you do with bad news? You drop it on Friday afternoon.
Of course. Well, it was a political version of
Patriots
dropping
just
it on
won the
Friday.
Super Bowl. Julian's gone. Mm-hmm. Julian, we're never getting better cover for this.
It was funny now. Because I mentioned it a couple weeks ago and saying this would be a really good time for them to announce a firing of him during the AFC Championship. Nope, but he was back there on Tuesday.
WMFO Medford.
Interesting. In food news, we learned new discoveries on why some people become ill from consuming seafood. Researchers have found a new strain of bacteria thriving along the Atlantic coast that can contaminate shellfish and sicken seafood lovers. Cheryl Whistler and her colleagues at the University of New Hampshire discovered a new strain of leading to seafood-transmitted bacterial pathogens in the world. Whistler is hoping that the new discovery of what they call ST631 will give public health agencies along the Atlantic coast and in Canada the data that they need to develop tools to reduce the risk of sickening and eating contaminated shellfish. The research is detailed in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology. ST631 is a strain of bacteria, and it causes an estimated 45,000 infections in the United States each year. Symptoms include diarrhea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. How many times have you heard somebody say, oh, you know, clams got really sick off of those?
Got a bad oyster.
Oysters got really sick of those. Luckily enough, here in the North Atlantic, Northeast, we have colder waters, which do help us. Colder waters essentially cut down on the risk of having a food pathogen.
Hot damn, oysters for everybody.
So, I mean, when you're talking about getting oysters in, you know, Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, you have a much higher risk of getting sick because warmer waters, it's like a cesspool for bacteria.
Really? Really, with the humidity, you shouldn't eat anything in that part of the country. Mm. Not just the seafood. Don't eat anything down
there. You can have the beignets. Like, all the bacteria is fried out.
Like, bring your own food in a cooler and don't eat anything else until you leave.
No, this is really interesting because the more we discover about these different strains of bacteria, it could lead us a step closer into preventing this sort of thing. So, I mean, it's the same thing with red tide and how we understand when you should and shouldn't eat seafood. Because understanding the risks of consuming raw products, whether we're talking about clams or fish. I mean, how many, you like sushi?
I want more clams. Mm. In technology news, Twitter may be dying. The company announced yesterday that it is launching a series of anti-abuse tools. Banned users may find it harder to create new accounts. Abusive tweets will be collapsed so that they don't appear at the top of conversations. And a new safe search feature will remove content from blocked and muted accounts, limiting the amount of abuse that appears in Twitter search results. Twitter's moves may be a response to flagging user growth, which ended 2016 stuck at 3.3% rate, and its stock price, which fell by 22% through mid-December. Twitter also found itself less relevant during the Super Bowl for the first time since 2012, with the use of hashtags and commercials down by 15%. Less than one-third of Super Bowl ads included a hashtag, compared with 50% in 2015. So
I read an article about that.
Too little, too late, guys.
The hashtags were going down, and URLs are actually up.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason for this, which is, why do I want people talking about my product on Twitter? Because, full disclosure, I am in digital marketing, okay? Anything I say should not be construed as advice or forward-looking statements. I think that's what we're supposed to say in this situation. People who are on Twitter don't go to websites. Somebody who's on Twitter is sitting there, oh, yeah, I'm on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's on Facebook is like, yeah, I'm on Facebook. And both of these platforms are driving advertisers crazy because all the users are over there. But you can advertise on those platforms all day long, and it doesn't get you a single sale. You want users on your website. Because if they're on your website, you're controlling the experience and you can push them toward things that will get them to buy.
Of course.
They're on Twitter. They're like, I'm following this hashtag. I'm like, oh, I love this guy. You know, like, and share and retweet and all the rest of this. But nobody buys anything.
People still use Twitter?
Not as many as used to, apparently.
Because weren't we talking about how there were upwards of 3 million fake accounts that were created that were basically bots?
Well, there were 330 million Twitter accounts.